out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 27th of March, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at Radio Arian. And as it's Tuesday, we're joined today by Denmark's finest, Nat Danelaw. Nat, how are you doing today on this lovely spring early evening?
Well, I'm doing fantastic, and thank you for having me on your podcast on Radio Arian. Well, we just got a bit more of the cloudy weather, but hopefully here in the next couple of weeks, it's going to, you know, brighten up a bit, and it is going to be wonderful to be here in the Nordic nation.
I'm sure it will be. I mean, I must make it over there sometime. I'd really like to see Denmark and Sweden and that part of the world. It's somewhere I've never been to, but I've always found the people there to be very friendly whenever I hear them or see them on the television, and the place looks really nice, and you know, it just looks clean and tidy and much better than our capital cities that we have. Our capital city over here in London, in Britain, which is horrible and just filled with mud people. But anyway, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about going back to basics today, Nat, I believe. Is that what's been on your mind this week? What was it you wanted to talk about today?
Well, since I am offered the fantastic opportunity of talking here on Radio Arian, I thought to myself, I'm sure that the listeners here on Radio Arian are, you know, generally speaking, well-educated, but as I have conversations, I bring forth a lot of what you could call consensus of understanding. And again, as I am a Nordic National Socialist, sometimes I might be using phrases that some people might be a bit confused about. So I would like to clarify like some basic concepts, which essentially boils down to parliamentarism versus the organic state, you know, the National Socialist world teaching, essentially. So what I'm going to do now is explain, and this is, some people might find this blackpilling, but this is just a harsh reality that in my observation and own experience has transpired in attempts to achieve political power and implementing real politics. So before I go on, I shall explain what has been attempted for the past, well, I think it was stated by a relatively wise man that we are now in the 100th year of right-wing failure. And to a certain degree, I agree. So I will first talk about the movement Modernizer. And I'm bringing this up to essentially clarify what the whole point of critique regarding parliamentarism is built upon. The movement Modernizer takes what you would call truth, which is National Socialism, fascism, whatever you want to call it. It is truth. It is order. It is the natural law. They take that and they think, yeah, this sounds good, but we need to tame it down a bit. We need to cut down on the bombastic Titanism that is engraved in this ideology. The authoritarianism, we need to cut a bit down on it. They dumb down the message. And this has been seen with the Danes Party. This has been seen with the Swedes Party, the NPD, the BNP. They try and dumb down. We've also talked about this before. They try and dumb down and appeal to the average white middle class, lower class, working class voter in Western Europe. They dumb it all down. And they go in, and normally it's a failure, right? They don't appeal to radicals. They're too radical for the moderates, and they're too moderate for the radicals. So, you know, they fall short. And it's happened so many times. But if we are to hypothetically say that the movement modernizer, let's just call them modern nationalist, they manage to get into parliament, you know, they manage to get their 10%, maybe 6%, you know, they get into parliament, they get their 10, maybe 7, 9 mandates, whatever they have, like a minuscule amount of parliamentary seats, they get into the parliament. And what they then will experience is the frustrating and infuriating, like what you would call degradation and destruction of political ambition. Because when you enter parliamentarian politics, or let's just call it electoral politics, democracy, by any means, you will realize that, as history has proven time and time again, it is a long line of compromises. When you might be going in with the ambition of getting 20, you have to keep dividing that. You keep dividing it. You go down from 20, go down to 15, go down to 10. And you might only be getting maybe half of a quarter of what you originally intended to try and pull through in the parliament. Because you will have to constantly talk behind backs. You will have to hide in the masses. You will have to talk to people and see if you can find a compromise with people who essentially don't agree with you. And there's also another fundamental flaw in it. If anyone is familiar with the writings of Dr. William Pierce, everyone will know of the Lemming Principle, which dictates that 95% of all populations are essentially 100% bound to comfort. This means that regardless of how fiery of a speaker you are, and regardless of how crucial points you explain to them about how things will be in 10, 20, 30 years if they don't act and do something, you know, they will still come home to the nice apartments. They will look in the fridge, see the food. They'll sit in front of the TV under a nice leather couch, and will still crack open that six-pack of beer they enjoy every night. They will not have the investment to act because they don't understand what is happening. So that is one fundamental flaw that. And that is what a lot of what you could call modern nationalists have tried. They've tried to appeal to the 95%. But the 95% will always vote on one thing, and that is the general rule of the mob. The rule of the mob, which is essentially always interest-based. And it is also what creates the strife in our society. It creates classes. It makes the classes even more aware. Rather than having the entire nation and all of its classes realize that they're all part of one crucial organism, that they're all serving as a different function and they're all crucial to the survival of the people and the nation, they put up against one another. They start focusing on their class interests. They're thinking with the wallets. Some people think, how can I avoid paying taxes? And others say, how can I get more in taxes? That is also something that the radio airing contributor Harold Covington at some point pointed out in one of his relatively wonderful books, where he said that democracy is the fight against people who produce and people who consume. Right. So that's an important thing to understand. So what am I proposing? Now, I said that we can't really use democracy as a means to achieve anything. Even if we were successful, we would essentially lose sight of what our ambitions were in the long line of compromises and backstabbing and verbal diarrhea. We would be standing, it would be pointless. And regardless of if we tried even through movement modernization, we would fall short, as I said earlier. To radical for the moderate, to moderate for the radical, right? So what is that leaving us with? Well, let's have a look at what movements in the last 50 years have actually had political success. Let's look at what is actually working. Rather than trying to go for the, and I know that a lot of people are saying that the movement modernization is crucial. We gotta have it. And they put on their suits and their ties and they, you know, try and, you know, cut down a bit on the harshness of the rhetorics. And they always fall short. They always end up in scandals and the parties crumble. But let's look at the parties that have actually had legitimate political success. Let's see what is actually growing, what is actually showing life. What is the tactic that is causing that some of these, what you could call, true right organizations, like, you know, not even right, let's just call them fascists, ethno-nationalists, hardliners. Why are they successful? In Scandinavia, we are already in the process of creating the neo-nation, the Nordic nation. Let's look in Greece. Here we have, well, as they are still in parliament, they're still doing the most crucial thing. They're having real political power on a regional level. And that is actually the key word, a focus on the regional, where you can actually have direct influence. As I said earlier, the voter is very immediate. They understand their immediate surroundings. They don't understand things 10, 15, 20 years ahead in the future. And it doesn't matter if you show them the statistics, which might be very concerning if you're interested in statistics, but to the average voter, he will just kind of shake his head and say, oh, these must be these fake news I've heard about on that TV I heard about. So they will reject it regardless. But on a regional level, I saw in Italy how they set up their own health clinics for Italians, and how in Scandinavia we have like a lot of cultural projects being done by the Nordic Resistance Movement, and how they're very active in all sorts of matters and spaces. And of course, we have Greece with the Golden Dawn, who essentially is doing everything that the movement modernizer does not like. But yet, here they are. They have political power and they're growing. The same goes for the Nordic Resistance Movement. They are growing. And yet, the movement modernizer always falls short. Why is that? No. The simple truth is that if you appeal to the radical, if you appeal to Titanism, you will attract the fiery spirit of change. And if you just appeal to the lowest common denominator, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get the lowest common denominator, and you're going to look like an asshole.
I'm just going to end up having to compromise all the time. I was thinking along similar lines myself. I was thinking about how a democracy, where you have one group, where you have everybody voting, and you have one group against another, and you are always going to have people that are feeling that they have somehow lost because they wanted something else and they've lost and one group has won. And it repeats again and again every 5 years or every 7 years. You end up with a small part of the population are the only ones that are voting anyway because everybody else is fed up of it. And the people that actually win usually end up only representing 10 or 15% of the actual population. So nobody is happy. People are against one another. They're fighting against one another. And what we really should have is people come to a consensus. And if you had a nationalist state, which just had one party, and people could come to a consensus. And if everything was guided by what is best for the ethnic nation, then you're not going to have these arguments. And if there were arguments, if there were people that were disagreeing, they would have to agree to only do something if it was unanimous, if everybody agreed with it. So you would then have to convince people that your way was right. And I think that way you'd be far more likely to actually make the right choices because you would have argued this out and you wouldn't be arguing it because you want your party to win. You would be arguing it because you want the best idea to win, the idea that is closest to the truth, the idea that is going to benefit the ethnic nation the most, rather than individuals seeking to get elected again, or parties seeking to get elected again, or working for vested interests. You would avoid all of that, and you would end up with the best policies. This is fascism. You know, the bundle of the sticks is so much stronger when it's all together, and it can make the shaft of an axe. And it's the same with the idea of the state. If you have everybody that's working for the same goal, the best of the ethnic nation, then they can work together and come out with policies that succeed, that are going to benefit the people. I mean, just look at National Socialist Germany. In that short space of time, they leapt forwards. They were 10, 20 years ahead of the rest of the world. Just because of the way that the state was working, it was working for the good of the ethnic nation. So democracy, right at the very root of it, is flawed. And fascism is the natural way. And when you were talking about the movement modernizers there, Nat, it's a serious problem, isn't it? It's because people think, well, things have changed. We're living in the current year now. We have to modernize. We have to allow homosexuality. We have to allow miscegenation. Or we can't speak out against Jews because it's the current year.
We have to allow up to 75% white people. You know, yeah. 56%ers.
all of this nonsense. But it goes against natural law. That's the point of it. Natural law doesn't change. It doesn't matter what year you are living in. Sodomy is always going to be wrong. Miscegenation is always going to cause racial bastards. I mean, usury is always going to be wrong. This is another thing that needs to be put in there. Usury goes against the very, very idea of having an ethnic nation and standing up for your nation. It goes against the spirit of nationalism to be wanting to make a profit out of other people's misery, profiting from giving charity. Basically, it's taken away all the feelings of charity that we and love that we have for our people, because you're just seeking to make a profit all the time and seeking to make a profit out of something which shouldn't be there to make a profit. Money is there as a measure of currency. It shouldn't be there to increase in value. It's there to transfer resources around the country to where they need to be used. All of this is encapsulated in the idea of the fascist state, and that's what we need to be driving for. I mean, this idea appeals to people when they hear it, and it appeals to the radicals, and it's the radicals that drive everything forwards. And it's so true what you're saying about as soon as people compromise, they cease appealing, because these parties are still going to get attacked by the media. It doesn't matter how much they cuck on their principles, they're still going to get attacked by the media. And at the same time, if they do start compromising, they are then going to lose the support that they had. They're going to lose the appeal that they had to new people. And if you look just recently, I mean, we can look at the rise of the biggest nationalist website in the world, and it got to where it did by being absolutely radical, absolutely extreme. It was the most extreme site that's ever been seen. That's how it got its success. You know, it may have got banned, but that's what brought it its success. And if you look at the organization we have in Britain that got banned, they were absolute extremist radicals. They weren't violent, but they were absolute radicals. And look at the fear that it put on the government. Yeah. It totally scared the hell out of our government. I mean, they had classed them as terrorists, the lot, but they've gone down in history and they've affected a lot of people, and people that never would have heard of our message now do know, and they know that there is a revolution in the air. There's an uprising. There's a feeling of racial togetherness and fighting back against what's going on. And everyone is now aware of it. None of that came about through movement modernizers or civic nationalists. None of it.
No. And that's the reality. What we are talking about is securing our cut of the pie, or as the Americans would say, our slice of the pie. That is what we are essentially promoting. If we are to achieve real political power, there is lots of different schools of thought. There are like the thought of securing revolution through information to the masses, and there is, of course, like the IRA-inspired methodology of trying to secure a piece of the pie. And of course, there is the heavily regional revolutionary-based strategy of essentially subverting a whole populace in an area against the state and essentially making a state within a state, essentially creating a whole parallel society where your guys are on top and you're the guys holding the real political power. I will say I'm in favor of all ideas. All I know now is that the current system we have is no longer viable. Some people think that we can somehow turn the ship around, but, you know, when the ship itself is a piece of shit, you know, sink it. If something is falling, you can see it's a piece of shit, push it. We don't need it. As long as the Aryan race remains intact, as long as it exists, the Nordic nation, all the Western European civilization will continue to exist. Wherever we are, civilization will continue to exist, and the systems we create will be a direct byproduct of our racial character. So these Western parliamentarian plutocracies we have at this very moment, you know, it's just a farce, a facade. It's not something that is inherent to us. Essentially, the way it's morphed and mutated, it's all done in the accordance with certain foreign entities from the Middle East who got into our system. It's a tumor at this point. It's no longer viable. It's no longer beneficial for the people. It's a tumor. You remove tumors. National socialism is the philosophy of the surgeon. We remove cancer.
You know, an example, a very modern example, actually, of what you were talking about there. I was just mentioning the other day on the podcast that I do with Alex Davies. We were saying that so long as we have our genetics there, then we can rebuild the civilization. And an example of that is Australia. And you had the lowest classes that were sent to Australia. You had people that didn't own their own land, people that were out on the streets, people that didn't know how to read and write, people that were prisoners, basically, were sent in chains over to Australia, and they built the country. And that was the lowest racial stock that we had. They were all white, but they were the lowest classes of whites. And yet they were able to build a first world country that was leading the world in wealth and in riches. I mean, that they had an immigration policy. Everybody wanted to get to Australia. Everyone was desperate to go to Australia because it was such a good country until they turned their immigration policy around. But that's just an example of what can be done if you keep your genetics pure. And this is why that should be the center of everything is race and keeping the race pure. So long as we stay white, we can always bounce back. We can always rebuild things. But if you lose that genetic integrity, then you're going to end up turning the country into India, Mark 8, 9, 10, or whatever it is. I mean, every one of our previous white civilizations has ended up like India. India is just probably the most recent one.
Garbage can.
Yeah, you don't want the country to, they will never be able to bounce back. They will never be able to reach the heights of the Aryan civilization ever again because they are no longer Aryan. And this has to form the center of everything that we do. Race has to be put right at the center of it.
Precisely. Oh, let's make a bit of a topic change. Let's dive into the spicy beans, as they say in America. I'm not sure if they say that in America, but it's we've all heard about that page called Facebook. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. Fake book. It appears to have lost a fair amount of money recently, so I hear.
Yeah. It's not looking very good for Zuckerberg. From what I can see, in the past 10 days, Facebook has lost $70 billion in 10 days. And a lot of the financiers are backing out. No one really seems to want to invest in Facebook anymore.
That's some pretty good news, I think. I mean, this scandal with the Cambridge Analytics, it seems very bizarre to me that they're accusing Cambridge Analytics of harvesting people's data. And that's exactly what Facebook's for. That's all Facebook has ever done is harvest people's data. Cambridge Analytics were doing nothing different to what Facebook do. When Facebook did this during Obama's campaign, Obama was patted on the back and they said, oh, look how clever he is. He's used Facebook to target people on there for advertisements. And when Trump does it with Cambridge Analytical, suddenly there's this huge scandal. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And you've got people say, oh, I'm pulling out of Facebook now, as if they didn't know this. I mean, we used to have intelligence agencies that spied on everyone, wrote down everything that they were doing, and kept all these records on what everybody was doing. And nowadays, people just give it all to Facebook for free. I've never been able to understand that, Nat.
Well, Facebook is like the modern equivalent of like Eastern Germany's Stasi, except for the fact that everything is voluntary. Everyone is like reporting in on it. It's kind of bizarre. In my country, we have the CPR system, which essentially is a personal number system. The Danes have been conditioned into giving away personal information very, very quickly. You know, essentially, with one number, they have like everything registered about us, like major events, like driver's school like records, whatever, all sorts of licenses you have, and your criminal past, your sick history. Even at this point, they're making up a genome center here in Denmark to like keep all of our information. And Facebook was very successful. The Danes were one of the first people to really jump on board with like the whole concept of Facebook. We were by, I think it was like back in 2008, we were like the one nation with the most people on Facebook. We were very quick to give away all of our information, and we couldn't understand how people would take advantage of that or try and abuse that in some way. But yeah, but it's fantastic, really, if you think about it. I mean, of course, it's severely hypocritical that it's just now that they're having a problem with it, since like Obama, the warlord of African descent, abused it as well. But it's more the idea of an enemy entity bleeding. Facebook is an enemy, no doubt about it. The entire media establishment and all of these establishments and institutions, they're all hostile towards us. So we should take it as a good thing that kike fuck known as Zuckerberg is a bleeding. People are leaving his shitty site, investors are bailing, and I cannot wait to hear about the time Mark Zuckerberg shoots himself in the face with a gun.
It is quite glorious to see it happening. It really is. But, you know, what's the issue here is privacy, isn't it? Privacy is really important. And you hear people say, well, if you've got nothing to hide, then why would you want to keep anything secret? And it's not about keeping secrets. It's about privacy. And just having your lives, keeping your lives to yourselves. I mean, you don't want to be giving all your information over to anybody else. And look at the court cases that we've had just from people having conversations on Facebook. We've had them over here in Britain, private conversations on Facebook, and people have been sent to prison for them. And what you're doing when you've got these websites like that, you think it's your information because you're the one that wrote it, but it's not. It's their website that you're putting it on. I mean, you know, you have to be careful about what you say about yourself and what you give to these people. I mean, Facebook is a hostile entity. It has always been a hostile entity. Most of the internet is hostile. I mean, they don't want us on there. They would remove us if they could, but they can't. And sometimes we forget that the majority of our people aren't aware of our websites and the way that we do things, and they get caught up in Facebook and all this information that they end up giving away, and it's all so that it can be used against us. Targeted advertising, that's using it against us. They seek to change public opinion by targeting, you know, cultural Marxist information at us and hiding right-wing news, all these sorts of things that Facebook were doing. It's great to see them finally getting a taste of their own medicine. That's what's really upset them, I think, is the fact that Facebook's data has been used to promote right-wing ideas like Brexit and Donald Trump. That's at the root of it. It's nothing to do with people's information being used, is it? It's what it was used for. It's finally used against them, which is great.
I will recommend something to the fine listeners of Radio Aryan, that they get off Facebook. Don't become a algorithm in Salk's system of usury. Reject them, that, you know, pleasure. Reject Salk. Delete your Facebook profile, whatever you have. Delete it now and try and invest some time in the real world. Make real life connections.
And if you really do have to use social media, then get off Facebook, get on Gab, and and listen to Radio Aryan. Nat, thank you very much
every day.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on today, Nat. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. God bless and hail victory.